Father Aaron Westman has written a great new book called The Church's Mission in a Polarized World. We talk about that today on Personally Speaking. Stay with us. Welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti, and Father Aaron Westman joins me now. Father Aaron is the Vicar General and Director of Formation for the Glen Mary Home Missioners. He has a PhD from the Catholic University of Louvain in Systematic Theology. Father Aaron serves two prison systems in Cincinnati and Dayton, Ohio, and he lectures and publishes regularly. His recent book is called The Church's Mission in a Polarized World. Father Aaron is here with us today to talk about polarization in Western society and how we might engage rather than fear those who hold different beliefs and convictions. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking, Father Aaron Westman. We're here today talking about a wonderful new book that Father Aaron Westman has written, The Church's Mission in a Polarized World. And I thank you, Father, for writing it. But before we get into the book, just some background. I know the principal energy of your life, you have many, many commitments, but one of them is building up the body of Glen Mary Missions. And I think for a lot of listeners and the watchers around the world, they may or may not be familiar with Glen Mary. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely, Monsignor. It's great to be here with you and also with your listeners. So Glen Mary was founded back in the 1930s. And the primary purpose of Glen Mary is to go to counties throughout the United States that have very few Catholics and actually no official Catholic presence. And so we go to regions such as Appalachia and the southeast of the United States. We go to those counties. We do missionary work. We try to build up the church in those areas. Hopefully, if we're lucky and with God's blessing, we try to bring a parish and all the goodness that comes from having a Catholic presence in that area, reaching out to the poor, standing in solidarity with the folks in those counties. And then at some point, handing over that parish and that mission back to the diocese and then going on to a new place, kind of like St. Paul did.
Okay. What are the means of support for what you do?
So Glen Mary is supported almost exclusively by outside donors, supporters throughout the United States. Because the mission areas where we serve are actually some of the poorest areas of the United States, and the Catholic communities are so small, we rely on outside donors to support us. And people are really very, very generous, and we're very grateful for that.
Is your own background similar to that, or are you from a different world in terms of the family of origin, the community you grew up in?
Yeah, so I come from the state of Minnesota, and the interesting thing is that I grew up in a town that did not have a Catholic church. And so most of my friends were non-Catholic Christians. So I had the experience of knowing what it was like to be in a town that didn't have a real strong Catholic presence. We were more Catholic in my area in Minnesota than in Glen Mary's missions, but there was a similar connection there. And so when I heard of Glen Mary, I was very much drawn to this idea that there are places throughout the United States that have no Catholic presence, no Eucharist, no priest, no brothers, and that you could actually go there and do missional work in those areas.
Yeah. You know, my parish is based on Long Island, New York, and everybody here is Catholic. So it's a world I don't know, but I'm intrigued by the good work you do. This will be a broad question, but I'm intrigued by what you've learned through Glen Mary Missions. Years ago, I had Cardinal Basil Youm come and give a talk. We had a charity that was supporting kids who were disabled. And the talk for him was, what do the disabled, the handicapped, the specially challenged, what do they teach us about the mind of God? And I guess I'd like to apply that to the work that you try to do at Glen Mary. What does working with the poor teach us about the mind of God?
So I think first and foremost, I find that the people in the areas of rural America have a deep connection to the land, a deep connection to nature. And so I think it for us in Glenmary, we come to learn from that and from them a deep appreciation for the gift of creation that God has given us. I think that's very important. Many of the people that we encounter have strong family ties, and family is very, very important to them. And family is much, much broader than just kind of immediate. It's kind of like what we might call like extended family or clan, and you really take care of your family members as best you can. And so I think that, you know, reminds us of the importance of community and how God is a God of community and how important that is.
Now let's go back to the community that formed you. You could serve mankind in so many ways, Aaron. You have many, many talents and gifts. You chose to embrace the path that we call priesthood, this particular call. Why, how, and did you have support from the family in doing that?
Yeah, so actually for the first 22 years of my life, I never considered priesthood once.
Okay.
And I grew up Catholic, and I was pretty much a regular mass goer. I strayed a bit during my early college years.
Right.
Many probably have that experience.
Yeah.
And then in my last year at the university, I went to St. John's in Collegeville, Minnesota. I ran into a Glenmary priest. He was on sabbatical after finishing up his time in leadership. His name was Father Jerry Dorn. He became a great mentor and friend of mine. And it was really through that relationship that I began to see, first of all, my faith grew. I came to know God at a more profound level. And then I started to consider the idea that maybe God was calling me to be a priest. It was a crazy idea in the beginning because I had never thought of it before. I was on a different track in my life. And I started to talk to him about it. I talked to my family and friends. And praise the Lord that people were very supportive in those early days. And that means a lot to me to have that love and support from my family who, as you know, like our families can't completely understand that vocational journey. It's very individual, but they nevertheless could see something happening. And they were just like, okay, well, we'll continue to go with you and we'll pray for you.
Yeah. I want to talk too, because you came to this topic, a specific topic about polarization in our world and our culture. Of all the many, many possibilities for what you could talk about, what you could write about, why did this particular topic grab your mind and your heart, Aaron?
Well, I came back into the United States after 2017. I was living abroad in Belgium, working on a PhD in systematic theology. I was studying the challenge of secularization, which is kind of related to polarization.
Yes.
But when I came back into the U.S., because I had been away for a while and because I think things had changed a bit in 2017, I realized that polarization was really affecting people's lives. And I saw it first and foremost in my own family. I saw how they were kind of being captured to some extent, you know, in the negativity around polarization. They were saying things and sharing posts online and doing things that normally they just weren't doing. I saw it in parishes. So I was serving as a pastor at that time, and I was listening to my priest friends, also friends who were ministers. I heard from folks about how, you know, they were saying, like, I no longer talk to my sibling anymore because of the challenge of polarization. Somebody would say, well, my daughter and I had a falling out and we don't even see each other anymore. So my heart was moved in those early days. And because I was busy being a pastor at that time and finishing my dissertation, I kind of started studying polarization as a personal hobby. And in the midst of that, I started to see that I was becoming polarized too, not because of the research, but because of having come back into the U.S. And I was like, what is going on here? So a number of people had asked me to prepare some retreats and to give different talks. I gave a talk in a seminary. People were just curious about the conversation and about the theme. And as I started to present on the research, people just said, you know, this really resonates with us. We're really struggling. Father, would you please write a book on this theme? And I resisted it initially because at that time I was serving on Glenmary's Council in my first term. And I thought, I don't really have time for this. But people kept encouraging me to do so. I finally said, okay, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try to write this book. And since then, it's been certainly meaningful for people in their lives from the feedback I've received.
And for our listeners and watchers around the world, the book we're talking about is The Church's Mission in a Polarized World. You know, our guest on Personally Speaking this week that will air is Vice President Mike Pence. And even he talked about the fact that in his otherwise very united family, that when these topics come up, animated discussion, not always very agreeable discussion. I think it's happening in every family. And Father Aaron Westman's helping us to understand how better to bring ourselves into a greater unity by realizing we can be different perspectives, but the same spirit binding us together. Well, let's stop at the church for a second, because when we talk about polarization. Right away, we think of politics and the larger polarization between nations around the world. But even in our own spiritual family, it seems to me there's a great deal of polarization. What do you make of, and this is, I guess, a challenging question for all of us, what is the mission of Pope Francis? And I'll tell you why I asked the question. He certainly makes us think, and he challenges us to look at old models and think about new models. But there's no doubt about it that, as one priest friend of mine said recently, his challenges can make life very confusing for us in trying to explain who we are, where we're going, what we believe. Father Aaron Westman, as a guy who's a teacher as well as a writer, how do you pull together what the purpose of this legacy of Pope Francis is?
Yeah, that's a wonderful, wonderful question. And so one of the things I tried to do in the book is to say, you know, society in the U.S. is polarized, and that happens to be kind of around political and partisan issues, and that's affecting the church. And so societal polarization is, in a sense, influencing the church in some ways, or that is individual Christians, in some cases, to be something that I think we don't want to be as disciples of Jesus.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the church herself is, as I would argue, that as Christians are contributing to polarization too. And I talk a lot about our use of language and how we see the other as a them. And we get into some of this kind of the culture war mentality. And that metaphor has such a strong influence on us. And all of a sudden, rather than being people who desire to encounter the other and share the gospel with the other, we see them as an enemy because they have a different view than ours. And we want to destroy them or keep them at a distance, right?
Right.
So the church is in some ways contributing. It's also being influenced. And then we have what it is, this great invitation by Pope Francis over the last number of years to consider synodality.
Mm-hmm.
And the super interesting thing for me as I've been writing, so synodality was kind of in a seminal form, at least as Pope Francis was articulating and talking about it, when I was sort of finishing up the book. And I talked in my book about these kind of tools to depolarize or to deepen communion. And they were flexibility and curiosity and deep listening and prudence and trying to create sacred space. And then in a sense, this was also then happening in Pope Francis's ministry and what he was trying to do in the church. And I think this is clearly something that the Spirit is trying to do right now. And essentially, I think what this is an invitation for us to say, we have to find places, spaces where we can practice respectful dialogue, deep listening to each other. And I am not good at this, so I admit this wholeheartedly. I need to grow in these things, especially, and I know this in my role as a leader in a religious community and living in a community with 20 guys. Deep listening, seeking to understand, looking for nuance, right? Not to just make generalizations and sort of cast people away, but really listen for nuance, be open to learning from the other. And in the midst of all of that, certainly to speak what we feel is true and think is true and what's been handed on to us, but not without first establishing a deep relationship with the other person, a sense of mutuality and trust. Because only if we do that, I think, only if we do that, will the other person hear us and will we hear what is alive inside of their heart. So I think that's kind of where Francis is leading the church. And I tried to highlight some of those things within the book that I wrote.
You know, Father Aaron Westman's our guest. Back in my high school, college days, very active in those competitions for debate. And one of the things our coaches would always teach us was get the gist of where they're going, but be formulating while they're talking your proper response. So we weren't really effectively listening to each other. We were preparing our next argument. I'm afraid most dialogue, if you can call it that today, is just like that. I get an idea of where you're going, and I'm going to come back with 10 other points to counter what you have to say. So do you have any insight into what must any of us as Christians do to effectively listen, truly listen with heart and mind and ears and heart to what those people are saying? How do we truly listen and not just say, I'm going to score my points when you make yours, but I'm going to be open to the possibility that you have something to say that I had never thought of quite that way before?
It's a really, really important thing today. I think this is one of the most important things for us today in the 21st century, especially in the church, to cultivate and to learn to practice. Because I think we kind of have two extremes going on. And this is demonstrated in some research, but it's also anecdotal. On the one hand, good people have stopped talking.
Yeah.
And that's not good, because we learn from each other by talking. So good people have stopped talking. And then when those folks who want to talk civilly stop, then the more extreme and the more, let's just say, intensified voices and perhaps negative voices then rise to the top, because they're the ones that are interested in speaking and speaking negatively sometimes. And then on the other hand, if people do engage in conversation, it's like you said, they're speaking past each other, or they're not really listening. They're really kind of trying to formulate 5 to 7 things to say in response. So I actually find that today, and I've seen this work, and I've been so moved, because again, like I said, I need this in my own life. I have found in many, many different settings that these kinds of things work. So we have to be very intentional. We have to say, look, this is so important that as a family, as a religious community, as small groups in a parish, we're going to come together and take a resource that we want to talk about. Take a document from Pope Francis. Take the forming consciences by the bishops. Take any resource that people can deal with together, and then go through it. But in the context of that, then start just saying, here's what I am hearing within this resource. Let other people articulate what they're hearing or reading within the resource, and then actually basically mirror back to that person what you have heard him or her say. And then they can say, well, that's not quite exactly what it is I'm trying to say. And interestingly, not only do we learn, but we help the other person better articulate their perspectives, because oftentimes, and this is the case for me, I haven't always formulated what it is that I truly think or believe, right? We're always in process of kind of understanding who I am and what it is I believe. And the church gives us this beautiful body of truth and teaching. But again, I'm trying to appropriate that. And so by having this process of mirroring back and forth, that can be very helpful. And then the final thing I'll say in that, we've brought into Glenmary facilitators. So there are people who are trained in these skills. So this can be done in a parish, in a religious community, it can be done in a diocesan level, to bring in a facilitator that actually helps people have these conversations. And I have been so moved by that. I walk away saying, I'm connected to the person. I might not agree with the person on everything that was said, but I have grown and I have more questions. And I think that's the part of really being Catholic, is to really wrestle with the deep questions of life.
Father Aaron Westman is our guest, and we talk about his book about polarization in the world and the church as well. I admit I put right up front that probably since the decision was first made in 1973, I am militantly pro-life. I don't see any reason to take the life of an unborn child, but I knew that my mind was closed to any other possibility. So I've spent a lot of time over the past 30 or 40 years spending time, first of all, with men and women who've been through the abortion experience and try to understand why they came to that decision, and even have made friendships with people who made their living by performing abortions, so I might better understand the other side of the issue. That's not something most of us do, and I realize that's a problem to try to walk in the shoes of another. But I want to apply that to our political system. You know, and I know, Father Aaron, that neither party fully represents Catholic value for sure. But I go online and I listen to some masses where there'll be priests in their homilies who will say, you can never vote for a Democrat because they're for the 9-month right to abortion. I'll go to another place and listen to a mass where someone will say effectively, you can't vote for the Republicans because that they're insensitive to the poor. They don't care about the migrant. And I just wonder, what do you think we're supposed to do as proclaimers of the gospel in being true to what we treasure, but at the same time, not closing the door permanently on anyone?
I really appreciate you sharing that story about your life and how you've tried to work within the pro-life movement. I read a similar story from Peter Coleman's work. It's called The Way Out: How to Overcome Toxic Polarization. And he talks about the group of, I think it was all women up in Boston, I think in the 80s or 90s, when there was a lot of violence happening around abortion clinics. And it was a group of women that got together, and half of them were on one side of that debate, and half of them were on the other side. And they committed themselves in the midst of all of that intensity and even death and violence, right? To sit down with each other and try to do what you said there. Really understand the other person's perspective. Try to figure out, where are you coming from? And then more importantly than that, it's not that we're just our ideas or our positions. We have to see past the idea and past the pos in our position to see the person. to see the dignity of the other person and to recognize that. And in fact, over and over again, the research on this suggests strongly that contact theory actually works. Contact theory is essentially to say, if you bring two groups together and they have different views, what happens is they don't always change their views, but people typically say, I do feel like I'm more well-educated at this point. And they do say, I now see the other person as being much more human. So I think that is really key right now. And to connect that to what's going on within the church, I would say that on a parish level, I've never had this opportunity. There are some groups right now that are trying to organize this, but on a parish level, if we could pull this off throughout dioceses, throughout the United States, I think this could be so helpful. Get small groups to come together. And let's say you're a Catholic and you lean blue or a Catholic and you lean red.
Right.
Provide an opportunity for a person to say, look, I lean blue.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what's part of my faith that influences me to lean blue or to vote blue. And then the person can also say, but here's where, you know, I kind of have problems with also voting blue, right? And then allow those who are lean red to hear them and do that mirroring. And then they articulate, so I lean red and here's why, because of my faith, but here's also where I struggle. From what I know, that is not happening a lot. I think if we did that, we would realize there's so much nuance out there in what it means to be Catholic, and people are really wrestling with their faith in order to try to make an informed political decision when we go to the ballots. I think we would be wonderful as a church if we did that. And just the final thing I would say on that is, I do believe strongly that the encouragement from the church for us, particularly as leaders, as priests, to not put our support around a particular party or candidate is a very, very important thing. So as I was taught, and as I feel the church is inviting me as a priest, I have to minister to all people, regardless of how they cast their vote, right? Mm-hmm. And I have to make myself available to minister to all of these folks. And I can do that by listening to them and journeying with them, and then just holding up, particularly Catholic social teaching. Here are the values the Catholic Church upholds. Here are the values that we're trying to utilize to inform our decisions, and then really leave people to, again, form their own consciences in the context of all of that.
Father Aaron Westman is our guest. And when you write a book about polarization and you realize the trouble we're in this world in terms of one set against another, I have to wonder about hope in your own personal life. Years ago, one of the first interviews I ever did was with the film director Frank Capra, whose most famous picture is It's a Wonderful Life. But at the opening of that film, what I love is, you know, is George Bailey sick? They talk about in heaven. No, worse than sick. He's discouraged. And I just wonder, when Father Aaron Westman writes a book about polarization and is aware of all the divisions in our larger culture in the world, how does Father Aaron Westman keep hope alive personally?
That is such an important question. So you're exactly right. And I knew in writing the book, as I was going through some pretty heavy stuff, I knew that I had to try my best to lead people out of the book, leaving them with signs of hope. And so, first of all, I focus a lot on Jesus and a spirituality that I think can empower people today. And I think that that can provide hope to us in a polarized world. The second thing is, I was amazed at how many wonderful organizations and people who are working at this challenge right now within the United States and actually throughout the world. I mean, I'm talking about organizations here like Braver Angels. I'm talking about Santa Gidio, Focolari, folks who are dedicating themselves to do what I would call theologically deepening communion. And they are so wonderful at it, and they have acquired skills and they have all of these lessons they've learned. So I was amazed at looking at these organizations. And then the people, I think of Daryl Davis, for instance, who I highlight in the book. He's an African-American man who's dedicated his life to going to Ku Klux Klan gatherings in order to befriend Klan members. And because of that, they have left the Klan, right? And then the final thing is, in having been able to give talks on this theme all over the United States now, I'm encountering so many wonderful individuals who are saying, yep, this is a challenge, and I'm willing to do something about it. And I've been amazed by that.
Father Aaron Westman's our guest. When you are a priest, how many years are you a priest now?
Since 2012, so I guess 12.
2000, okay, 12 years of priesthood. You know that this work of ours can be like the myth of Sisyphus, putting the boulder up and it's going to roll right back over you. I saw recently you were at the Aspen Institute and you're meeting with all these various representatives of religions around the world, and you realize that there's so much possibility out there as yet unrealized. So you are not a discouraged priest after 12 years. You are a man of hope. And one of the ways you express the hope is through the church's mission in a polarized world. I would hope every pastor, every parish council, every religious would get a hold of this book and use it, as you said, as a stepping on point to begin dialogue in whatever community you work in. First of all, how do people get the book, Father Aaron?
So you can go online, either on Amazon or at Focolare, and you can purchase the book. It's on sale right now, which is a wonderful thing. So you can check that out.
Okay. And who do you want to use it? Is it for everybody?
Actually, yeah, I've found it to be useful for everybody who's read it so far. So my own family members who might not necessarily have a big background in theology have found it accessible. I gave a retreat to the Diocese of Knoxville, and I utilized the book. They found that to be very helpful. I've had also bishops who said, this has been a great tool for me too. So I think it's accessible, and I think it's been helpful to most people who've used it.
Final question, I promise. For a young person out there who is thinking, as you never did in your youth, about the possibility of a religious vocation, of the possible embrace of priesthood, as a young man who is normal and smart and had other possibilities, who chose this particular path, in the 12 years that you're doing this, any regrets, or would you do it all again?
I don't have any regrets, and I'm just super grateful that God has called me to this way of life.
Wow. I want to thank Father Aaron Westman for being with us and personally speaking, for writing the book, The Church's Mission in a Polarized World, and just for being someone who takes seriously the command to be a reconciler, to be someone who brings people together, who challenges us to truly listen completely and totally to the point of view of someone we disagree with strongly, who wants us to recognize the primary command of Christ is to love one another, not necessarily to agree, but to love one another. Father Aaron, you give this older priest much hope. Thank you so much for your witness.
It's really been an honor. Thank you so much.
I want to thank you for being with us and personally speaking. If you need to reach me for any reason, you can write me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. You probably listen to this program on the Catholic Channel, Channel 129. You can also watch us on YouTube at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusanti. We're also on Facebook at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusanti, as well as Instagram at Personally Speaking Podcast. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer, Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.